Yes, madam.
This is a hold-up.
Sorry?
This is a hold-up, and if you scream, then I'll shoot you. Do you understand?
Yes.
I want you to put all the money you've got into this bag, okay?
Okay.
You.
Me?
Yes, you. Stay where you are.
I will. I am.
Put your hands where I can see them.
Okay.
And you, hurry up with the money.
Yes, right.
Don't hurt her, please.
I'm not going to hurt anyone, so long as I get my money.
Here. That's all the money I have.
Okay. Thank you. Please, don't move. Please, nobody move, or I'll have to shoot you. Nobody move. I'm going now. Thank you. Hope you have a nice day. Sorry about this.
Then all of a sudden, someone came running towards her. A tall, blonde man.
Only when his head hit the floor did the woman realize she'd shot him.
Then she rushed for the door.
Tried to walk calmly across the row, but almost immediately broke into a run.
And only stopped when she'd reached a public toilet several streets away.
In the toilet, she took off her hat, sunglasses, blue shirt and blonde wig and stuffed them all into her shoulder bag, along with the money and the gun.
Then she went into a small grocery and bought 2 pints of milk.
The woman's name was Minita.
The time was 2:45. The date was June the 30th.
The year was 1972. The city was Stockholm.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
How are you?
Fine.
You look lousy.
I know.
You're too thin, unlike me.
How's the diet going?
Bloody awful, actually. All I can think about is eating.
No change there, then?
No, but it's worse now. Sort of obsessive. There's a voice in my head just saying, food, food, food. And I've put on weight. I'm actually heavier than I was before I started. Oh,
got a present for you. Sort of welcome back. Really? Oh, is this it?
Yep.
This is my present.
It's a murder. 15 days ago, a 60-year-old man called Carl Svert was found dead in his flat. Another tenant in the building had complained about the smell. Police had to break in. The man had been dead for a month, maybe more. So, not obvious how he died. He was already too decomposed, but everyone assumed suicide or heart attack.
And then what?
Post-mortem revealed he'd been shot.
Right.
Well, the flat was locked from the inside, and there was no gun.
No gun?
No gun in the flat. So, how did he shoot himself?
I've no idea.
Exactly. I have to go now.
Where?
NPB.
What for?
2 days ago, a woman walked into a bank and shot a gym instructor.
Oh, it was in the paper.
So now they think the special squad needs reinforcements.
And they want you?
Well, actually, they wanted you, but the order came in last Friday while I was still in charge, so I told them they could have me instead.
Oh, thank you.
You don't really want to be dealing with all that, do you?
No, I don't.
That's what I thought. That's why that...
This?
Yep, is a present.
Well, thank you.
Happened on 57, literally over the road.
Well, I'll sit and read it now. Mm-hmm.
Martin Beck, head of the National Murder Squad, had been away for 15 months.
Recovering from a bullet wound.
On his desk was a bunch of blue flowers, which he took straight to the forlorn-looking receptionist. They seemed to cheer her up.
Then he sat and read the report Colbert had given him.
The whole matter had been dealt with very badly from the start.
His first call was to the pathologist.
Of course I remember. I sent the report in 2 weeks ago.
Well, I'd just like to know your grounds for assuming suicide.
The police officer I spoke to...
Who was that?
I think his name was Gustafsson. Yes, Detective Sergeant Gustafsson. I spoke to him on the phone and he said it was a routine job and there was only one question he wanted answered.
And what was that?
Whether or not the dead man had committed suicide. Either the old boy's taken his own life or had a heart attack. Those were his exact words, I believe. So I began by opening up the thorax, his chest, and the question was answered immediately. There was no doubt.
That it was suicide?
He had shot himself through the heart.
Have you got extensive experience of bullet wound?
Well, I worked in Jordan during the Civil War, so I mean there was no shortage of bullet wounds there.
Right, but presumably there weren't that many suicides.
No, there weren't.
Because most people who shoot themselves aim at the head and not the heart.
Well, I don't think that's strictly true. Because when I was studying psychology, we were told that some people, especially the romantic types, do aim at the heart. That this is quite a widespread phenomenon.
Do you think the gun was fired in contact with the body?
Not in my view, but I could be wrong. The disintegration of the tissues makes that difficult to know for certain. But I think he held the gun pointed at his heart, but with his arm stretched out. In which case, I suppose he had to pull the trigger with his thumb.
Well, thank you. You've been helpful.
Why are you asking me these questions now?
Well, because you can't shoot yourself without a gun.
Sorry?
There was no gun in the man's flat.
No gun?
The flat was locked from the inside and there was no gun.
Martin Beck's next call was to a Detective Sergeant Gustafsson.
I don't understand it at all, but I presume things like that do happen.
Things like what?
Inexplicable things. Things that are just a complete puzzle. Can't be solved. I could see at once that I just have to give up.
Give up?
Getting to the bottom of it. Because, well, I'd just be wasting my time.
I need to see you in my office now.
You want me to come to Vestberia?
Yes, please.
Well, I can't. I mean, it's just impossible.
3:30.
But it's impossible.
Actually, I'd like to meet you at Barry's Gartan at the flat.
What flat?
The flat where Sverd died.
Look, I really am up to my neck.
3:30, Barry's Gartan. Don't be late.
The front door to the flat had been replaced and sealed.
Martin Beck broke the seal and walked in.
A slight smell of putrefaction had bitten its way into the walls and furniture.
He went over to the window, which was secured by way of a hook-and-eye type lock.
Directly opposite him was Kronenborg Park, and to the side was the CID building at Kungsholmsgarten.
Detective Gustafsson arrived at 4:05, sat down and lit a cigarette.
Which did nothing to endear him to Martin Beck, who dearly wanted a cigarette himself, but had been told by his doctors,
ever since he'd been shot in the chest 15 months ago,
that he oughtn't to smoke.
What time did you get here?
About 10.
What did it look like then?
Bloody horrible. Full of big white maggots. Smelled to high heaven. One of the constables threw up.
Where were the officers?
One was on guard outside the door, the other was sitting in the car.
Had they guarded the door the whole time?
Well, that's what they said.
How long were you here?
A few minutes. Long enough to see it wasn't anything for CID.
And can you summarise your observations?
Sure. Well, the body was lying there, about 3 metres from the window.
About?
Well, I didn't have a tape measure on me.
Go on.
Body looked about 2 months old. It was pretty bloody horrible. There were those two chairs, that table, the bed. I'd like you to see it now. Shall I go on?
Was there anything on the floor?
Not a thing apart from the body.
Was there anyone else in the flat?
No one came, no one went, except me and the two constables. And then, obviously, the van for the body. Well, since then, we found out that he shot himself. That type, they usually kill themselves, don't they? One way or another. If it's not suicide, they drink themselves to death.
So you've nothing else to say?
No, not really. Except that it's bloody weird about the gun.
Yes.
Can I go now?
No.
I've got nothing else to add.
The forensic team who inspected the flat, they found 2 small blood stains on the rug. You see these patches of blood?
What patches of blood?
Here. And here.
Is that blood, is it?
Well, it's not tomato ketchup.
It could be coffee.
Except that it's not.
Well, I wasn't looking for blood, was I? Because I thought it was a heart attack or suicide by pills or something. I mean, at that point, I wasn't looking for a gun either.
What were you looking for?
Nothing in particular. It all seemed very clear.
Did you notice how the dead man was dressed?
No.
But you could see that he was poor?
Well, obviously he was poor, living in this type of flat.
Not worth bothering with.
I didn't say that. But you can't start playing Sherlock Holmes every time you come across a dead tramp.
Do you know your handling of this case has been atrocious?
How do you mean?
You called the pathologist and you gave her instructions based on completely erroneous ideas. After declaring no criminal investigation was needed, you had the body carried away without even having any photos taken.
Are these official criticisms? I mean, will you be making an official complaint?
Absolutely.
Well, look, I'll do whatever I can to help.
It's a bit late for that.
Meanwhile, at Kungsholmsgarten, Colbert was struggling to adjust to his role within the special squad. His new boss, for the time being anyway, was a man known as Bulldozer Olsson, and he was in love with bank robbers.
To Bulldozer, police work was the most exciting thing imaginable.
This, no doubt, was because he was not a policeman.
He was a district attorney, and he dressed in shockingly bright colours.
In fact, his wardrobe was a regular source of disgust to Gunvald Larsson,
who prided himself on his sharp suits and Italian shoes.
The Rouge brothers are two of our most cunning bank robbers, and this is their fourth job in 4 months.
But it was a woman.
Oh, sorry?
It was a woman who raided the bank.
Ah, disguised. Disguised in a blonde wig.
How do you know that?
Witnesses. We've witnesses who say she could have been a man.
Yeah, but could have been is not conclusive, is it?
Excuse me?
Yes, Mr. Larsson.
The Roos brothers weigh 15 stone, wear size 12 shoes and have hands like that.
Naturally, they sent in someone else. They're not stupid. But any time now, it'll be the Big Bang.
What Big Bang?
It's Bulldozer's Big Bang theory.
One last heist. One last haul. That's what they're working up to. But where, gentlemen, where and when is it going to happen? We have to think. We have to think as if we were the Roos brothers.
Can you stop yelling?
What? Sorry?
You're not in the district court. We're sitting right next to you.
Have you got any ballistics evidence?
Yeah, bullet in a cartridge. They say she shot him with a 45, probably alarm or auto.
Big gun.
Yep.
Especially for a girl.
Yep.
Maybe it was a bloke.
Of course it was a bloke.
But the Roos brothers don't shoot anyone. That's the whole thing. No one ever gets hurt.
But there's a first time for everything, Mr. Larsson, and I believe this was one such occasion. This time, they sent someone else in, someone who could feasibly pass as female, and whoever this was, they then panicked and fired.
What are you doing?
He's cracking his knuckles.
Why?
That's what he does when he's irritated.
In his dream, Martin Beck was running along a train station platform.
In front of him, a man raised a gun.
The man looked like Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen fired.
And everything went black.
He had no memory of how the man had looked in real life.
They hadn't met at a train station either, but on a rooftop, under a cold spring sky.
Hello.
You still in bed?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
It's 6:30 in the morning.
I know. I've just been up with the kids since 5, so I thought I'd ring.
At 6:30?
I thought you'd be up.
At 6:30?
Yeah.
What do you want?
What did you think of the case?
It's interesting.
Really?
I went to the flat where Sverd died.
Oh, yeah.
I went through the whole place, and now I'm pretty sure that there was never any weapon. It hasn't gone missing. It was never there in the first place.
I agree.
I've discovered that all his life he was a warehouse man. At the age of 56, he was declared medically unfit, and that he'd dragged his days out on his pension, and that he'd recently moved from his old apartment on Tullegarten to this new place on Boriesgarten. But I've no idea why anyone would want him dead.
You know, Run could have shot him.
Run?
From his office. Go and stand in Run's office, and you'll see what I mean.
Where is Run these days?
Kungsholmsgarten. So's Larsson.
What are they doing there?
Working on these bank robberies with me.
Well, you're all working on that.
Bulldozer's in charge.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a nightmare.
The Roos brothers, who so obsessed Bulldozer Olsson, were currently holed up in a mansion block on Darnvik Cliffs.
One of them was called Steyn and the other was called Orca. Steyn was the depressive one.
I feel sorry for people.
What people?
People out there.
What are you talking about?
People. Normal people. The people of Stockholm.
Oh.
Imagine working your arse off to scrape together enough for rent and the instalments on your car. At the end of it, what have you got? You end up in an old people's home being ignored. And you'd probably die soaked in your own piss.
Oh, you're cheerful today, Steve.
But do you know what I mean?
Not really, no. I don't. Don't think about these things. You do, you're the deep one. What are you doing?
Cleaning the guns.
Again?
I find it therapeutic. Mallet's on.
Yeah.
Take a gun anyway.
Yeah. Mallet's on. Come in, come in. Welcome.
What's the gun for?
Just a precaution.
Here's today's post.
Thanks.
Did you get any crayfish?
In July?
Yeah.
No.
Did you get my underwear?
Yes. If I may say so, it's ridiculously expensive.
That's my brother. Expensive tastes.
Yeah, and as for that shaving cream...
You didn't get the shaving cream?
I've been running around town like a poisoned bloody rat. It doesn't exist. No one stocks it anymore. Is that my fault? I don't think so. I've got you everything else. Passports, an apartment, cars, train tickets. And you're not happy because I can't get crayfish in July or a shaving cream that doesn't exist.
Women.
Women?
Could you organise us a woman?
Of course.
That assistant of yours. What's her name?
Manita.
Yeah, that's it, Manita.
Manita's not really... She's not your type.
Really?
She's general standard calibre. Nothing special. Very average. Besides, she's gone away.
Well, where's she gone?
She's staying with her sister. But look, there are plenty of girls.
No, it's okay. I like the look of Manita.
Here's today's list.
Okay. What's an astrolabe?
It's a device for looking at the stars.
Oh.
Try looking in a few antique shops.
Okay. I'm doing my best. Is that all?
That's all.
Well, I'll be on my way.
Okay.
Okay.
Right then. Till tomorrow.
He's a louse.
He's a skunk.
Steamed this letter open.
Again?
I don't mind that.
Really?
Not really. What can he do with this information? Nothing really. But I mind that he sells drugs to underage kids. That's what I object to. And the pornography.
Gotta make a living.
There are more honourable ways to make a living.
Like what? Like robbing banks?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
What does the letter say?
Everything seems to be in order.
Nobody in Sverd's building knew anything about him.
This was hardly surprising, as he kept himself to himself.
And besides, he hadn't lived at Barry's Garten very long.
Martin Beck hoped he might have more luck at Sverd's old building on Tula Garden.
Sorry to bother you.
Shouted twice to come in, didn't you hear me?
No, sorry.
I don't usually lock the door, not unless I want some peace and quiet.
Are you Rhea Nielsen?
Yeah. Are you a policeman?
Yes.
I don't need to see any ID, thanks. Come in.
Thanks.
Do you mind if we sit in the kitchen? Say if you do.
That's fine.
Take a seat. What's your name?
Martin Beck.
What kind of policeman are you?
National Criminal Police.
Salary scale?
Ooh. 25.
So, you're doing all right then?
Yes. Yes, I'm doing all right.
I'm not very fond of the police as a general rule.
Okay, well, I'll try to be brief.
Go on.
Mrs. Nielsen...
Rhea.
Sorry?
No one calls me Mrs. Nielsen.
Oh, well, you are the owner of this building, is that right?
Yes. I inherited it from my dad. But we don't have any gambling dens or prostitutes or thieves. I mean, if that's what you're looking for.
No, it's nothing like that. It's about one of your ex-tenants. He moved out last spring, I believe.
Sverd?
Yes.
What about him?
He was shot dead recently.
Oh.
And we're not sure if it was suicide or murder.
I see. Okay, do you think we could do this in a slightly different way?
Sorry, how do you mean?
Well, I just want a real conversation, you know? A conversation in which we tell each other the truth and we don't say meaningless things for the sake of it.
Sure, we can try that. I could try to do that.
You want some tea?
Yeah, please, if it's not any trouble.
You see there?
What?
That's meaningless. If it's not any trouble, it's sort of meaningless. because I wouldn't have asked you if it was any trouble. So you could have just said, yeah, tea'd be great.
It'd be great.
Good. Sorry. I'm awful, I know, but honestly, it drives me crazy. Are you hungry? Have you eaten yet?
No.
Excellent. I'm starving. So, I'm going to make toasted cheese sandwiches under the grill and tea.
That sounds nice.
I mean, even if everything's going to hell, you can still make something nice to eat, can't you?
I suppose you can.
And then you feel a bit better.
In fact, Martin Beck never found that food made him feel better.
He was rarely hungry.
And when he did eat, he often succeeded in making himself feel worse.
But he didn't say that to Rhea, despite her request for honesty. Within 7 minutes, six hot sandwiches with slices of tomato and grated cheese sat on the table. There was also a big pot of tea.
He wondered how old she was.
37.
Sorry?
That's how old I am.
Oh.
That was what you were thinking, wasn't it?
Yes.
Eat.
Thanks.
No, I'm always hungry. I eat 10 or 12 times a day, but I don't seem to put on weight.
My friend Lennart would be jealous.
Really?
Mm. He eats 10 or 12 times a day and gets very fat. What do you make of this man, Spared?
Well, he was quite strange. And I wasn't completely sorry when he moved out.
And in what way was he strange?
Well, I don't know. He just didn't... I mean, he hardly said hello to people. He talked to me, but no one else. And it's quite a friendly, quite a communal building. And his first flat was a good one. And it was cheap. It only cost 80 kroner a month, but he moved out.
And did he say why?
No, he didn't. And he used to have four locks on his door. When he moved out, he unscrewed all his chains and bolts and took the whole lot with him. Did he have all that at his new place?
Yeah.
You think it was a phobia?
Well, either that or he had some genuine reason to be afraid.
The other thing is, he was ill.
Oh, really?
Cancer. I think he was dying.
Really?
I think so. He didn't say that, he just implied it.
Did Sfair keep any valuables in his flat?
No. That's why I thought the lock business was a phobia. Although...
Although?
He only ever ate cat food. And his rent was just 80 a month. So even if he only had his pension, he should have been able to buy a bottle of wine or a sausage now and again. I mean, with his pension, shouldn't have been as bad as all that.
No.
You know, he made me think of those people who live off potato peelings and dressing rags that have thousands of kroner stuffed under a mattress.
Mm. There was no money under Sved's mattress.
Well.
Rhea?
Come in.
Oh. Can you use the washing machine?
Sure. Ingela, this is Martin.
Hi.
Hello.
Ingela's just moved into Sved's flat. Is everything okay?
Everything's lovely.
Good.
I'm sorry, but I don't have any washing powder.
Oh, there's some in the cupboard next to the bath.
I haven't got the money right now, but
Don't worry. Just do me a favour sometime. Lock the street door at the end of the night or take the bin out or something.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
As a landlord, you have to look after people.
Well, not too many landlords are like that.
I know. It's disgusting, really. My dad was no different to most of them. I try to be conscientious. You know, I think people who live in the same building, they need to feel that they belong together. Or that this is their home.
Well, thank you for the sandwiches.
You going?
Yeah.
You can stay for dinner if you want.
Thank you, but I should probably go.
Okay. Kids are away.
Sorry?
My kids. That's their bedroom.
Oh, I wasn't, I didn't mean to,
yeah. They're with their father this week. You're divorced too, right?
Oh, can you tell?
Yeah, for some reason.
Well, thank you again for the food and the conversation.
Well, come back.
Really?
Yeah.
I might just do that.
He walked down the street,
thinking of Sverd.
thinking of Rhea.
He was in a better mood than he'd been in for a very long time, although he wasn't conscious of it yet.
The following morning, he tracked down Sverd's doctor at the hospital.
What was Sverd suffering from?
Nothing at all.
Well, then why was he in here for nearly 2 weeks?
He'd been sent to us by his GP because of certain symptoms. Swellings on his neck, a lump on his stomach. Here he went through a series of examinations. The swellings turned out to be harmless fat formations and the lump a benign cyst.
Did you have any personal contact with him?
I spoke to him every day.
How did he react to the good news?
Well, initially, he didn't believe me. He honestly thought he had less than a month to live.
And that turned out to be true.
Really?
He was shot. We don't know if it was suicide or murder.
Suicide doesn't seem likely.
Why?
Because he was so thrilled when he heard he wasn't dying.
Did he have any visitors while he was here?
I don't know. Possibly. I did speak to a nephew.
A nephew?
He called to find out how Sverd was getting on. I was able to give him the good news.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You're very helpful.
Hello.
Hello.
You look slightly less awful.
What are you doing here?
Just had to fetch something.
Who are your bank robbers?
Difficult to locate. How's your locked room?
Well, the most interesting thing I've discovered is that Sverd was recently in hospital. And he thought he was dying, but then it turned out that he wasn't. And apparently his nephew called up the hospital to ask after him.
And that's interesting?
Well, Sverd didn't have a nephew.
How do you know?
He was an only child.
Oh. Oh, well, that is interesting, I suppose.
I gotta go and talk to Sverd's bank manager now.
Why?
Something Rhea said.
Who's Rhea?
Sverd's landlady.
Sverd's landlady?
She said he was like someone who kept a lot of money under the mattress.
How come you're on first name terms with Sverd's landlady?
She just doesn't like formalities.
Oh, so doesn't she?
What exactly did you come here to fetch?
This.
A stapler.
I'm very fond of this stapler. And they don't have the same kind at Kungsholm's Garden.
Is that the best you can do?
What do you mean?
It's a flimsy excuse.
I know what you're talking about.
What did you want to know?
Did Carl Sverd have any money in his account?
Yes.
How much?
54,000 kroner.
That's a lot.
Someone makes very regular deposits into the account.
Someone?
Well, it's not clear who. Could have been Mr. Sverd himself, or it could have been someone else. You don't have to say who you are.
This video was uploaded to the channel Thinking Out Louder. Please like, comment and subscribe to the Thinking Out Louder channel. Thank you.
To make a deposit, so... But, you can see here, every month, 750 kroner go into the account between the 15th and 20th of the month.
Did Sverd ever take any money out?
No, he didn't.
How old is this account?
It was opened in 1966, April.
And since then, 750 kroner every month?
Yes, but then in March this year it stops. March 16th, the final payment is made.
Well, that's about the time he died.
Oh. Well, we haven't had any kind of notification. Usually a relative.
He doesn't seem to have any relatives.
No one at all.
Apparently not.
Martin Beck wondered, could the person who made the payments, the man who claimed to be his nephew and the murderer, all, in fact, be the same person?
Where the hell have you been?
Vesperia.
What were you doing in Vesperia?
I just had to fetch something.
What's that?
This.
You went all that way to get a stapler?
It's a really good stapler.
I didn't realise you were so fast, did you?
It's my stapler. I mean, it's my personal stapler.
What, are you checking up on him?
Who?
Your mate Beck.
Why would I be checking up on him?
Well, how is he?
Better. Slightly.
I heard he's up for a promotion.
Apparently.
Don't think I'm ever going to get promoted.
I'm amazed that you've never been fired.
So am I, yeah.
Bulldozer wants you.
Me?
Yeah, he wants you to talk to this bloke called Mauritsen.
Who the hell is Mauritsen?
He says he knows where the Roos brothers are, where they are right now. Bulldozer's in there with him negotiating.
Negotiating what?
Well, police found him with a ton of drugs inside a shopping bag.
Why didn't you tell me as soon as I came in?
Because you were wittering on about your stapler.
I wasn't wittering. I don't witter.
Anyway, now Mauritsen's trying to get off the charge by offering up the Roos brothers.
Bulldozer can barely contain his excitement.
Bulldozer Olsson was so happy he was practically flinging himself around the room.
The man called Mauritsson was shorter than average, clean-shaven and slim.
As a type, he could have been called ordinary, and this had stood him in good stead.
He hadn't been inside for several years, and at the moment was neither wanted nor even under surveillance.
This is very exciting indeed. It's a very exciting day.
How do we know he's telling the truth?
Of course he's telling the truth.
But how do we know that?
Mr. Mauritsen, are you telling the truth?
Yes.
You wouldn't lie to us, would you?
Of course not.
No, of course he wouldn't.
What's this? It's my shopping list for the Roos brothers.
You do their shopping?
Well, they don't like to be seen out and about. Someone's got to get them the necessaries.
12 pairs of briefs and 15 pairs of socks. Does one of them eat underwear?
One of them never wears the same pair of underpants twice. It's kind of a principle.
No wonder he robs banks. He needs to fund his underwear habit.
Why do two men need four Donald Duck masks?
Right, stop fussing about that piece of paper. Mr. Mauritsen does not have to contribute to our entertainment. We can make our own.
Can we, though? Can we?
5 hours later, various other police officers had joined them all in the same interview room, and it was getting rather crowded.
One of them was a hapless young constable called Sakrisson, who was terrified to discover he would be working with Gunvald Larsson.
Let's go through the plan again.
Yes, let's.
Oh, I'm glad you're keen, Larsson.
Oh, Larsson loves a plan, don't you, Larsson?
Yeah.
He's a real stickler for sticking to the plan.
Good, good. Marvellous. Well, at 6 o'clock exactly, Mauritsen will ring the doorbell. May we hear the signal once more?
That sounds about right.
About right?
Right. It sounds absolutely right. I'll never be able to manage that.
Manage what?
That knock.
Christ, Sakrisson.
I'm just saying.
You're always just saying.
Well, we'll have to find you another job, won't we? So, let's think ourselves into the situation. Who's going to ring the bell?
Colbert.
He expects to see Mauritsen with the Donald Duck masks and the underwear, etc. And instead he sees...
us.
Exactly. And imagine the look on their faces. But we mustn't forget that they may be desperate and try to shoot their way out.
Yes, you mustn't forget that. You might be better off shooting them first.
No, that would suit you all right, wouldn't it? No chance of retribution if they're both dead, eh?
They might try to shoot their way out, but that's where our man with the tear gas comes in. We also have a man with a dog.
Ah, well, we've got a man with a dog.
What can possibly go wrong?
In a mansion block on Darnvik Cliffs, all was as expected.
Larsson and Run were standing on either side of the door. Both had pistols in their hands.
Colbert stood in between them, and the stairwell behind him was crammed with people. Sakrisson, the tear gas man and the man with the dog, two detective sergeants, plus several uniformed officers holding submachine guns and wearing bulletproof vests. Colbert himself was unarmed.
He rang the bell.
Everyone waited.
Sakrisson, in some unknown way, managed to make his pistol rattle.
Colbert's stomach rumbled.
No one came to the door.
2 minutes passed.
Larsson decided to fling himself against the door.
Which was not the plan.
The door flew open as if it hardly existed.
And Larsson flew too, right across the room and through an open window, onto and over the balcony outside. He was left dangling 5 stories up from the ground.
Run ran straight into the door itself as it slammed back and whacked him on the head.
Colbert went in after Run and found Larsson hanging from the balcony.
While attempting to rescue Larsson, Colbert was nearly catapulted over the edge.
The next man to arrive was Sakrisson, immediately followed by the dog.
Stop, police!
What are you doing?
No!
You shot the dog!
What?
You shot the bloody dog!
Oh, God.
Tear gas. Great. Oh. That's great.
Just what we need.
Oh. Right, Roos brothers, come out, wherever you are!
They're not here!
Throw away your guns! You're under arrest!
They're not here!
Hi.
It's you again.
Can I come in?
Sure.
Thanks.
Are you here to talk about Fred?
Not really.
Good.
Though I was going to use him as a pretext.
Well, you've ruined that by being honest.
Thought you liked honesty.
I do.
Bought you some wine.
Oh, as well as your honesty.
Yeah.
Too expensive.
I was trying to impress you.
You would have impressed me with cheaper wine, but hey, we can still drink it. I was going to study tonight, but it's so bloody miserable being on your own. Have you eaten dinner?
No.
Good. I'll make us something.
You're right, you know.
About what?
Sved. He had quite a lot of money in a bank account.
How much?
54,000 kroner.
Wow.
Yeah, someone was paying him 750 a month.
Who?
I don't know.
Can you tell me the whole thing? Are you allowed?
I don't see why not.
While she cooked, he told her the whole story.
And they drank the expensive wine, which was delicious.
How can you stand it, being a policeman?
They want to promote me to commissioner.
You don't want the job?
No.
I didn't think you knew how to laugh. You're tired?
Yeah, a bit.
You can stay if you want.
Really?
But I won't have sex with you.
Okay.
I don't mean that I won't ever have sex with you. I just mean tonight I won't.
Okay.
I wanted to make that clear.
Okay.
Okay.
The next day, he decided to go down to the warehouse where Sverd used to work.
Hey, this is private property, you know. You can't just waltz in.
I'm a policeman.
What do you want?
You worked here for a while.
7 days. But he's been here forever.
Oh, well, then he probably knew a man called Carl Edvin Sverd.
Who?
A man called Sverd. He used to work here. Do you remember him?
No, I don't think so. You remember everyone. Always banging on ears about the old days, about how much better everything
was. Yeah, well, it was.
See?
Sverd died recently.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I really just want to know, what kind of person was he?
Are you sure he's dead?
Very sure. Why?
Because he was a giant pain in the bloody arse.
In what way?
Look, I was at sea for years, you know, met all sorts, but I never met anyone as tight as Sverd. He was lazy, too. Got himself pensioned off. Claimed he had a bad back. Only thing he was good at was...
What?
Well, breaking into crates.
Oh, really?
Mostly did it when no one else was around, so he didn't have to share it out.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you. That's very useful information.
Are you off then? Is that it?
Well, actually, no. Can I join you for a beer?
You want to join us for a beer?
Well, I'll pay if that's okay. I'm in for the beer.
Yeah, that's fine by me.
So how long were you at sea?
Signed on in 1922.
1922?
Nah. On a schooner called Fram.
Martin Beck stayed more than an hour with the older man, talking of boats, drinking beer, and sitting in the sun. For some reason, he was feeling unashamedly happy.
From here, he went to the insurance office, which dealt with the warehouse.
How am I supposed to answer a question like that?
We must have records of what damages occurred and who was involved and all of that.
Well, of course, the foreman would make a note in his day book.
And you still have those day books?
Possibly.
All right, well, where would they be kept?
Well, somewhere in the attic. But it'd be impossible to find them.
Well, if the books are there, then it's certainly not impossible.
A young man was sent up to the attic.
He returned almost immediately, empty-handed.
Martin offered to accompany the young man, and half an hour later, they'd found the right box.
But they were there.
Well, my dear Mr. Maritson, I'm afraid things failed to turn out as we'd expected.
But they were there. That's where they were. I mean, they must have had some sixth sense that you were coming.
That may be, Mr. Maritson. That may well be. But the point is, I've done you a major service, Mr. Maritson, and I'm still waiting, as it were, for a quid pro quo.
You mean that you won't let me go?
More than that, Mr. Maritson. If you don't immediately tell me everything you know about the Rouge Brothers, we'll have you inside as an accomplice.
Accomplice?
That's right. Or your fingerprints were found inside the flat.
Okay. It so happens that I do have something you can use.
Really? And what might that something be?
Their plan.
Plan for what?
The next job.
Well, Mr. Maritson, that is the most marvellous news. The most marvellous. Tell us everything, and you're already as good as free.
Well, you see, I promised to help the boys with one thing or another, purchases and so forth, and every day I was sent to a tobacconist in the Birka district to pick up their post. And I made a point to always have a look at their letters. Well, there was a letter that came the day before yesterday, and it was very interesting. So interesting that I made photocopies, which I left at the Sheraton Hotel under the name of Count Philip von Brandenburg.
Oh, my dear Mr. Maritson. Would you like a Danish pastry?
Is he really thinking of letting Maritson go, just like that?
He's got to think of his reputation.
His reputation?
He's made a deal. And if he backs out of it, then he can't make any others in the future.
Well, I think it's a waste. It's a waste of a good opportunity.
Yes, it probably is.
What if we keep jobs on him anyway? We needn't tell Ulson about it.
Okay, it's fine by me.
Who's going to go first?
Yeah.
Why me?
I need something to eat. Hello?
It's me.
Hi.
He's got another flat.
What?
Maritson. He's got this place in Armfeld's garden.
Really?
I think we should break in.
You don't want to get a warrant?
Do you?
Not really.
I'm outside now.
I'll be right over.
A half-empty bottle of Parfait d'Amour, an empty bottle of Carl's Ham's Punch, an unopened bottle of beef-eater gin, dessert wine...
There's nothing in this flat but a lot of ugly furniture and even uglier clothes.
And quite horrible booze. Nothing I'd want to drink.
Monita.
What?
This photo. Let's
have a look.
Do you think it's his girlfriend?
Don't know.
He's never mentioned her.
Why would he?
I don't know.
Ah. Keys.
What?
Wonder what these keys are for.
The roof, basement.
Shall we have a look?
The keys opened the door to the basement.
The basement led them to an air raid shelter.
The air raid shelter led them to...
Larson? What? Come here. What's wrong? Look at this.
Christ!
Inside an old sandbox, they found...
a crumpled pale blue shirt...
a blonde wig...
a blue denim hat, wide-brimmed...
a pair of sunglasses...
and a pistol, a 45 caliber Llama Auto.
You don't need to knock.
I don't like to walk straight in.
You're silly.
I know.
Follow me.
Where are we going?
Something happened.
What is it?
Look.
A door.
Hmm? A locked door. Yeah, it's locked. I can't get it open. And you see there's a hook on the inside because the kids are getting older. They wanted their own lock. And I said, why not? Anyway, I was cleaning and then I slammed the door. Maybe a bit too hard. The hook flew up and dropped into the eye.
Rhea left him to it.
He smashed the door open on his fifth try.
Then he went into the kitchen where everyone was talking about Vietnam.
Excuse me, sorry. Rhea.
Yeah?
Can I borrow a torch?
A torch?
Yeah, I need to go out and look for something, but then I'll be back. I'll be back later, if that's okay.
Oh, that's fine.
Good.
Hang on a sec.
Almost all guns reject their cartridges to the right, but how far and in what direction?
It was a job that called for patience.
He was glad he had the torch.
Got it.
So you found the cartridge?
Yeah, have you looked at it?
Well, I didn't call to talk about the weather. I'm too damn busy for that.
I know you're busy. It's very good of you to call.
It is very good of me. Well, that cartridge was in a terrible condition. Getting anything out of it was damn near impossible, but I suppose you want to know whether it matches that suicide bullet.
Yes, please.
It matches.
It matches?
That's what I said.
Well, that's very good news.
Yes, it seems I'm the bearer of good news today, because I also have the gun.
Sorry?
The gun that fired the bullet is sitting on my desk right now.
You two don't look very happy.
Yeah, we have our reasons.
Why are you here? No one comes here of his own free will.
You've got someone called Maurits on, is that right?
Yep.
What do you want him for?
I just want a brief chat with him.
Good luck with that.
But does he not do chat?
Oh, he chats all right, but it's all bullshit.
We've got circumstantial evidence against him.
Yeah, we're up to our eyeballs in circumstantial evidence.
And he's still claiming that he didn't do it.
Didn't do what?
The murder in the bank.
Oh, right, I see.
It's airtight.
Yeah, he's been identified by witnesses and everything.
Well, I'd still like to talk to him, if that's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. Take him.
But bring him back, eh?
He's all we've got.
Please, have a seat.
I am the victim of a horrific conspiracy. The police or someone else has planted a lot of false evidence in my home, but when this bank was robbed, I wasn't even in town. Even my own lawyer says there's no possible chance I can get out of it. But then, am I supposed to confess to a murder I didn't commit? Is that what I'm supposed to do?
Well, the truth is, I'm not here to talk about the bank robbery. That's nothing to do with me.
Oh. Well, what did you want then?
In 1966, quite legally, you imported a case of Spanish liqueur and declared it at customs. I've got all these papers stating just that. Are the papers right?
Yes.
But the crate was destroyed in transit.
Yes.
A warehouse man called Sverd smashed it deliberately.
Yes.
But I don't think the bottles did contain Spanish liqueur.
They had phenadrine in them. It's a morphine-based solution. This is good.
Is it?
Well, you know, talking about something that actually did happen, it makes me feel less insane.
All right, so you paid Sverd $750 a month?
He wanted $1,000. He's a bloodsucker. How do you know all this?
There are documents.
But he must have smashed lots of crates.
But you were the only one who never claimed insurance.
Oh, clever.
Thanks.
I didn't want anyone else involved.
So then what happened with Sverd? You paid him for years and then...
I suppose I got fed up. Giving him all that money, for what? Last winter, I told him. But he said he'd go straight to the police and I couldn't afford to have them looking into my affairs. I threatened him with injury.
Then Sverd told you he was dying.
Did he tell you all this?
No.
He said he wouldn't live longer than 6 months. Said he was going into hospital soon, so I thought, well... What's another 6 months after 6 years?
When you checked up on him?
Called the hospital, yeah.
And that's when they told you he was going to live.
See, you know it all. What's the point in telling you?
Well, it's good to have things confirmed.
Well, so, you know what happened next?
Yes.
Then maybe you could tell me, because I don't know if he's alive or dead. I tracked down his new flat, which was easy. And then I thought of a simple way to do it.
You thought you'd shoot him through his window? Either when he opened it to air the flat, or else as he was closing it.
Do you know what type of gun I was going to use?
A 45 automatic, Lama 9A.
So you're in on the conspiracy too?
Believe me, I'm not.
But that's the gun they're saying I used for the bank robbery, but I didn't do the bank robbery. Can't you take over that investigation as well?
The bank robbery?
Yes. You're the only one who actually knows anything.
Yes, well, that might be difficult, but let's get to the end of this story.
Okay, yeah. Yes, this story. Where was I? Well, I went there at 10 o'clock at night.
What day was that?
April the 17th. I remember, because it's the day I was due to make another deposit.
And what happened?
Well, I went there, it was dark, no soul about. Inside the flat, the light was out, the window was open, the blind was down. I took up my position behind the trees. And after a few minutes, the old bastard pushes the blind aside, and seeing him standing there, I think, well, it's just as well to put an end to all this. And I'll fire.
And what happened next?
Well, that's the spooky part, you see.
Spooky? How?
He disappeared. But it looked like the window closed itself. I drove home, and day after day, there was nothing in the paper, nothing on TV, and I kept wondering, did I kill him or not?
Yes. Yes, you did.
At least that's something.
Yes, and that something is murder.
Yes. I suppose it is. How did he close the window? If he'd just been shot, how did he manage to close the window?
I think he must have pulled it after him as he fell, and the hook just dropped into the ring.
Yes. Yes, but that is possible, isn't it?
Which pretty much clears up the whole thing.
But that's only the beginning.
So what do you mean?
Well then, I drive straight home. I put the gun in an old bag filled with stones, leave it in a safe place. 2 days later, I take a motorboat out to sea and chuck it overboard. No one can get into my flat while I'm away. No one has ever had a key. How do you explain that gun turning up again?
Well, I can't. I can't explain that.
But you knew everything there was to know.
It was up to a point.
Please try to explain it to me.
Well, you must be in error somewhere.
In error where?
Something that you think is right is wrong.
Something that I think is right is wrong?
Yes.
Well, that's no bloody help. That's no bloody help at all.
Martin Beck knew nothing about Monita.
Monita was Maritsson's girlfriend.
And Maritsson had no idea that Monita had a key to his flat in Armfeldtsgarten.
They met when he was a regular at the cafe where she used to work. He'd asked her out about 100 times before she said yes.
As a single mother of a small child, she was lonely, and in the end she'd decided that any company was better than no company.
In the winter of 1971, the restaurant where she worked changed hands. The staff were fired and the place was turned into a bingo hall.
Monita was out of work, and poorer and lonelier than ever.
She dreamed about making enough money to start a new life in another country.
Sometimes she would go up to Maritsson's flat and play records.
She'd made a copy of his key on the one occasion when he'd lent her his.
One afternoon in April, she accidentally smashed an ashtray.
When she went to get a dustpan and brush from the cupboard, she discovered a briefcase,
which was curiously heavy
and turned out to be full of stones.
And, of course, the pistol.
The pistol which gave her the idea.
Not only the idea,
but the means to rob a bank.
And right now she wasn't at her sister's in southern Sweden, but in southern Italy, in a seaside town where she planned to make a new life for herself and her daughter.
What do you reckon then?
To what?
Our man Maritsson.
He's lovely.
Really?
No.
What did he have to say?
Well, he confessed to a murder.
Did he?
Not your one, my one.
Sveard?
Yeah.
Blimey.
I've got it all on tape.
What tape?
This tape.
That recorder's broken.
What?
It's broken.
But I checked it. I checked that it was fine.
Yeah, it works for the first 2 minutes, then it just stops. They're fixing it tomorrow.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter. There's definitely enough circumstantial evidence.
But it turned out that there wasn't.
Maritsson's defence lawyer called in his own experts, who pointed out that the cartridge had been too seriously damaged to be linked with any certainty at all to Maritzon's automatic.
Martin Beck testified, but what he had to say was found to be full of gaps, and in fact to be based to some extent on absurd assumptions.
But Maritzon was convicted of another murder, that of the gymnastics instructor and the bank robbery on Hohnsgarten.
That night, the man called Maritzon lay in the dark in his prison cell.
And wondered,
what the devil happened?
And how?
Someone must know. Someone must.
But who?
In the locked room by Mai Huerval and Per Valeur, Martin Beck was played by Stephen McIntosh and Colbert by Neil Pearson. Larson was played by Ralph Ineson, Run by Wayne Foskett, and Bulldozer Olson by Michael Maloney. Maritzon was played by Ewan Bailey, Rhea by Nadine Marshall, Sacrison by Joe Sims, and Yelm by Robert Blythe. Malm was played by Nick Murchie, Stayen by Rick Warden, Monita by Philippa Stanton, The Pathologist by Hannah Wood, and Gustafsson by David Seddon. Other parts were played by Ben Crowe, Joanna Brooks, and Matthew Watson. The narrators were Leslie Sharp and Nicholas Gleaves. The original music was by Elizabeth Purnell. The Locked Room was dramatised for radio by Katie Hymns, and the director was Mary Peat.